At the age of 12, I was living in Brewster, New York, and I was going to middle school, Henry H. Wells Middle School, from 7th to 8th grade. And it was a dark, dark time. I was miserable. I was alone. I had a smattering of friends. I had no sense of scale, no sense of meaning. I was looking for something, anything, that represented escape. It was around then that I started to use the Apple IIs in the computer lab, and it was also the start of my great project, one of the projects I'm most delighted to have completely and utterly failed at, and it was called Project Applejack. My name is Jason Scott. You're listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to Daniel Boyd and Jeff Atwood and the hundreds of other Patreon supporters for helping bring this podcast to life. This podcast is about stories, especially stories about technology and how they relate to both myself and to the people I've met. And I decided that I really want to pack a lot of darkness into one episode so it doesn't keep leaking into others. There's a theme through a lot of what I've lived through with computers, which is that for all the joy that they've brought, they also represent a large amount of darkness in my life as well. It can get pretty weird when everything you talk about with computers seems to have this underlying rage or bitterness or sadness. I see it a lot in vintage computing and retro computing and all the other aspects of looking backwards. I see people expressing so much misery and hate, and there are so many countless battles truly being fought over nothing. What you find with this poison is that it represents the result of people who are very smart, who want to have control over a portion of their life when a large amount of it can't be controlled. And I'm absolutely not immune to this at all. If I look back over the many years, I've definitely gotten myself into battles I shouldn't have. I've been mean to people who shouldn't have gotten that sort of wrath. And unfortunately, I've honed my skills when it comes to wrath, such that if I really focus, I can really ruin a person's day, week, or summer. I've tried to get better, but maybe it's always going to be there. But let's go back to when I was 12. I believe pretty strongly that your tween years are a point when you can be turned into quite a radical person. You can be told a lot of crazy things, and you will ingest them, possibly unquestioningly, and become a true and honest zealot. If you're lucky, it's something like fandom, or a movie, or a sports team. Or, if things don't go as well, it just becomes kind of a free-floating rage that focuses on anything that gets in your way, or any sort of slights, perceived, real, or not real. I certainly fell into this myself. So it's 1982, and my mother has moved us to Brewster, New York, a community that's best described as a little rundown, and at the time, perhaps on the economic edge. It wasn't particularly infested with crime, but there really wasn't a sense of hope or activity going throughout this town. And we lived relatively close to the town center. I remember having an arcade there that moved from place to place because it was being done truly on the cheap. Whatever building lost its rent, these guys would move in with a few machines, put them up for a quarter, and you'd play some video games for a while. It wasn't really a case where you were going to get stars on the wall or painted space scenes. This was arcade as Parasite. And this, at least for me, was reflected throughout the people that I went to school with or walked by. It was just a place that wasn't feeling joyous. Our home was certainly functional. Our family was pretty much functional. But there was just a lot of sadness post-divorce, and there was just a lack of interaction with anything involving community or society or becoming a part of a thing that was greater than the whole. And whenever I draw from the well of remembering that time, there are two completely different things going on. The first is an utter sense of hopelessness and a sense of being trapped. And the other was this shifting portal of color and wonder and dreams and hope that came to me in computer magazines and in arcade machines. It's one thing to go to school, wandering the hallways, not really having friends, not understanding what people are talking about, and another to come home to a stack of magazines like Compute and Creative Computing that promised that with enough application of smarts and with the right kind of programs, I could make really incredible things show up on these screens. Multiply that by the fact that there was a computer lab at school that had something between 12 and 13 Apple II machines, and that I thought that these were beautiful tools, I was easily oscillating between the light and the dark on any given day. I really hasten to tell you that I am 47 years old. This was 35 years ago. And 35 years ago, if somebody had given me a gun, I would have shot people. If people had given me drugs, I would have taken them until I died. And if I had been in one particularly bad day and been near something that could hurt me, I would have hurt myself. Absolutely a low point in my life. And I still feel trails of what that was. And you know, when we look at things from this long distance of many years, you say, well, maybe it was hormones, or maybe you were not thinking straight, or maybe you just needed some sort of guidance. And the fact is that's probably the case. There were certainly factors in there. But that desperation of feeling like this was all it was going to be, and there wasn't much more to experience, and I'd kind of done it all in some sort of world-weary misery about just being alive, it's something that I'm very sensitive to in others. And it's one of the reasons people have seen me talk so energetically and openly about preventing suicide and getting into an intervention period with people, because I know how terrible that feeling can be and how persuasive it becomes and how it just colors and darkens and desaturates your world. I know that a couple years later, when I switched schools, switched towns, switched friends, everything was completely different. You know, by the time I was 15, I was a completely different person with different goals and a bright and interesting personality and outlook that I still like to find remnants of in my records and reading and seeing the comics that I drew and the things that I said and wrote. You know, just a person that I really like. But that dark, miserable kid who was 12 was me as well. And he's why I want the time machine. He's why I want to leave that one note that just says, it is going to get better. You simply won't believe it. And if in some small way, the crumbs that I've left in terms of old artifacts or old computer images, if they inspire a young person to try things instead of just spiraling down into the darkness, that would make me very happy. One of the reasons that I have so much old computer stuff, besides my parents' divorce, is that when a issue of a computer magazine came out, it had something called reader service cards. And in these reader service cards, there would be a grid of numbers. Those numbers would correlate to numbers at the bottom of every ad inside of an issue of a magazine. And if you circled a number, they would contact that company, and that company would mail you information about their product. I circled every number. I mean every number, hundreds of them, in every magazine I got. And after a while, every single day at my mother's mailbox would be envelopes and folders and boxes related to computer products. Maybe software for a spreadsheet, maybe mail merge, maybe something involving a game, maybe a catalog of parts or novelty items or t-shirts. Sky's the limit. It was anything that was able to be circled, I circled. Anything that could be requested, I requested. They were my lifeline. They were indications that there were places out there that people were creating bright and colorful things, and that products that did absolutely wondrous tasks were mine for the taking as soon as I earned a little more money. They were hope. They saved me. My first attempt at scanning in this reader service mail was digitized.textfiles.com, and it still has a small collection. But in the years hence, I've been putting hundreds of them up on archive.org in the reader service collection. it's fun to me to see what these places were promising and what computers were thought to be and how they were going to play a part in lives. I mean, on a pure educational basis, as a research point, these things are priceless. But they're also memories to me because in almost every case, 12-year-old me opened them up and looked at them and wished he could get them and stayed around a little bit longer and didn't do anything stupid to be around for when they would become reality in his life. And through the documentaries, you know, I've met many of the people in the games and computer fields that I was reading about. You know, I would get a Adventure International catalog to read about all these great games and Scott Adams' adventure. And then I was in a truck, you know, a few decades later with Scott Adams, going back to interview with him for GitLamp. You know, it's having that kind of closure that's really made it worthwhile to me to do these very long documentary productions. It's so great to meet people who indirectly saved your life. So a little bit more about my middle school. This is something that happened, I think, in a lot of schools. Due to some deal involving the school district, they suddenly found themselves, there would be a pile of machines showing up, and only a certain number of teachers would want the extra workload of running a computer lab or even involving themselves in figuring out how to involve a game or a program or a computer into their curriculum. And sometimes you got the teacher who was the most driven. In our particular case, it was a math teacher. And I can say this with the objective perspective of an older person. He was a jerk. I mean, just a jerk. Not fantastic. This was not a teacher who inspired, who went the extra distance, you know. Part of me thinks that he took on the computers simply because there would probably be a pay differential. But it was possible, through arrangement with him, to get extra time on those computers. So I definitely took that advantage and worked on programs, either typing them in from Creative Computing or playing around with just ideas of mine in AppleSoft Basic, or getting my hands on pirated disks, which, frankly, I've kind of lost to time how those first disks fell into my life. But this would have been the first time that I encountered Beautiful Boot, which was a beautiful menu program for the Apple II, or that I played Star Blazer or Choplifter. So I found myself helping people with their programming or having them watch me type in programs from Creative Computing and then watching them flip out when the program actually did something and made a graphical image and some of them thought I broke it or something. I have a memory of getting a program working that I typed in from Creative Computing and it made the screen blink for a second, and then do a little twirling and then go dark, and my lab partner flipped out. She thought I had broken the machine. And again, faced with that strong internal depression, I remember that I worked on what I called Project Applejack. Applejack was going to be a program that destroyed the world. I didn't know how it would do it, actually. I didn't know what commands it would do or how it would interface or what it would do to people or if it required some other tool or attachment. All I knew is that I wanted a doomsday machine, maybe just to have in my back pocket, maybe just to keep with me in case of some contingency or if I needed to threaten or climb the power chain of this middle school. Not sure. But as I typed in lines, and it warned you that this was Applejack, and it asked for an input before you would proceed, I wanted it to be known that this weapon, this software weapon, was mine and mine only to control. Now, I didn't get very far with this terrible scheme. I mean, if it had been a tunnel that I was building a lair in, it wouldn't have gone more than a foot into a side of a hill. And, you know, if it had been some sort of car that I was building, it wouldn't have been more than one wheel and maybe a piece of metal. I mean, you know, programming-wise, it wasn't much more than 20 or 30 lines. But there was an infinite amount of hatred and misery and depression behind that program. I thought about it because many years later, working for the Internet Archive, I wrote a program called Applejack. Applejack just looks at a Apple II disk image and makes sure that a few fundamental properties are functional, and then puts up a warning if it thinks it isn't. It sounds so simple, but you know, it's because I'm always working on this historical material, and I want it to be good, and I want it to find any errors so that other people don't find the errors down the line. It's a program that's made out of serving others, of trying to leave things better than how I found it. It's a program that's made of caring and community and love. I can think of no finer name to give it. And I'll say this again. You know, this really dark period probably only lasted about 3 years, but 3 years to a preteen is a lifetime. And I had good things happen at that period. But getting away from that feeling of being trapped, that was a critical juncture in my growth as a person. I learned to control these feelings. I learned to either keep them under wraps or find ways to distract myself or to become really good at something like certain video games or computer games or programming, enough to give myself a purpose and get out of this spiral. And by the time I moved in with my father and moved to Chappaqua, New York, I really did forget why I had created Applejack in the first place. So let me tell you what did change when I changed schools and I changed towns. A kid who made no effort to get in front of anybody, who was withdrawn and silent and in the corner, became somebody who ran for school president and class president just because he could do public speaking. I started a humor magazine. I fell in with a social circle of crazy, out-of-the-box thinkers who have gone on to amazing careers and who have stayed friends and have been a vital and happy part of my life. And my love of computers, which previously had been a lifeline of a drowning soul, became a central core of my life, and some of the happiest memories I've ever had online happened throughout my teens. It got so much better. Please, don't worry. Like I said, one of the side effects of having gone through this myself is that I'm always on the alert for signs of it happening in others. I'm always looking for people who are reaching out to me, who seem to be trying to find a purpose or get a lifeline of their own. Maybe they just want to ask me some simple questions. Maybe they want to get a verification of a fact, or maybe they simply want to offer their assistance, their volunteering. A lot of archive team members started out with the team kind of hanging around online at an age maybe not dissimilar to the age I was when I wrote Applejack. You know, they want to be part of something greater, and they see that this whole group of nutty archivists are trying to save websites and dash in and make a difference, and they become part of it too. It becomes a part of their whole lives. If a simple email from me, or a phone call, or a response makes a difference in someone's life, it's worth it to me to respond to everybody who contacts me. I've now given multiple talks about the concern of suicide, and I have been contacted by people, usually once or twice every month, who tell me that, in some way, the speech made them change their plans, or made them check in on somebody who they didn't really recognize as falling into this trap. That's very meaningful to me. And I'm not saying it for kudos. I'm saying it because I want people who are listening to think about when they themselves have encountered others like this. Or maybe they are this. And I want to say that it does get better. Things change. Factors are different. New places. New events. It can sometimes feel like everything is locked into some sort of static experience and it won't change. Not the fundamentals. But they do. There are things that get better. We are an adaptable species. We will get better. And if help comes in the form of a mailbox full of mail, or a program, or a game, who are we to complain? This is Jason Scott. You're listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, Stefan Arendts, Astrid Smith, Kevin Waters, and all the other hundreds of Patreons who are helping to make this a reality. So a little bit more about my debts. Because of the podcast, it's been the first 2 months of payments, I have been able to walk over to bills that are between a few months and a few years old and end them. Be able to say, oh, I owe this amount to you? Here you go. I've got a spreadsheet, and that spreadsheet is going from red to green with every month. I am enjoying putting these podcasts together. I'm recording in a studio a short way from my apartment. Really great place. It's called Beacon Soundworks. They give me a recording booth, and I'm able to express myself in this tiny room about all the different parts of history and technology that interest me. I think it's really been fun. I think I'm going to do it for as long as I can. But it's your contributions as Patreons that are making a difference in my debt. So I do want to open the floor to people who have suggestions for what they would like to hear about, or something they've heard about me that they want me to expound on, or maybe a clarification about something I've said or written before to give you even more background information. I mean, I'll come up with stuff pretty much forever. I love telling stories, and I love talking about all of these spectacular experiences I've had. But if there's something that you're waiting for, let's get that right to the front of the line. Because without all of you, I'm just a guy talking in a very nice room.